And we're talking about deep elastic scattering in the conformal limit oscillation of QCD, or if you want, in any of the partial pressure wheels. The results I'll be presenting are mostly in this known paper we wrote last month, but I will be also using some results we did over a year ago, and this is work in collaboration with Lorenzo Carnalva and João Panetones. I don't think there will be much overlap with the talks of João, but it's useful that you already listened because I use some of the technology that he was explaining. So the motivation is that we know that QCD is approximately conformal at very high energies. So if we are probing the proton at very short distances, the conformal symmetry, it's a good approximation. And in particular, we are going to be considering the limit of high center of mass energy with all the kinematical invariants held fixed. This corresponds to the limit in deep inelastic scattering of low Bjork and X variable. I will explain this in a while, just to remind you. And the goal is to use the conformal symmetry and what we can learn from the ADS-CFT duality in order to make statements about deep inelastic scattering in the QCD. That would be the dream. So let me first start by reminding you what is deep inelastic scattering, for those of you who are not familiar with this, as I was not some time ago. So we scatter electrons of, say, a proton, and the electron exchanges a photon, and then this will produce a lot of hadrons. The goal is to compute this cross-section, and that basically what we need to compute is this coupling between the photon and the proton. And by the optical theorem, it amounts to study this four-point function, the four-point function between two photons, so the corresponding operator is the electromagnetic current operator, and the proton at zero momentum transfer. So we'll be focusing on a four-point function like that. So here I wrote it again. S is the Mendelssohn variable for this diagram. Q is the off-shellness of the photon because you see in the diagram before it was inside the diagram. P is the momentum of the proton. And there are two important kinematical invariants in the language of deep inelastic scattering. One is the Bjork and X. Its interpretation, it's the photon interacts with one of the partons, and X will be the fraction of the total moment of the proton that is carried by that parton that is interacting. And in the limit of very large S that we'll be studying, S is essentially 1 over X. So we consider small X and very large S. The other important quantity, kinematical invariant, is the off-shellness of this photon. That is, if you want, the probe, what is probing our proton. And basically, that 1 over Q gives the size of the part that we are probing. OK, so in the typically, what one does, one to obtain the cross-section is to compute this tensor. It's called the Dronic tensor. That depends on those two kinematical invariants, X and Q squared. And that's given basically by the two-point function of the electromagnetic current that gives the coupling of the photon to the proton in the proton state. And just by Lorentz invariants and current conservation, it only depends on two quantities. Here I call it pi 1 and pi 2. The rest is basically fixed by symmetry. Its imaginary part then gives us the cross section and hence the result we want. And in particular, usually the imaginary part is called also the structure functions because it corresponds to the distribution of partons in the hadron with that fraction of x and q squared. So now we want to study this in a conformal field theory. So to do that, I have to simulate what is a proton. And what I will declare is that I will consider a proton to be the state created by a scalar operator of some dimension delta. And the way I simulate confinement will be basically we'll compute a correlation function with this operator with some off-shellness. The off-shellness will be basically set by the scale of the QCD scale. So this, in this language, the Dronic tensor is basically the four-point function of two current operators, related to the photon, and two scalar operators. And I will be interested in computing when K2 and K4 square, basically as set by the QC disk. And notice that since J is a conserved dimension, its dimension is, it's a conserved operator, J is, its dimension is 3, and I will basically focus on this case. So we are interested in now in studying this four-point function in the Regi limit. So now this part, I think João managed to explain in the last lecture last week. The point is that we want to explore the conformal symmetry and study this Regi limit. So we have basically to understand what is the Regi limit in position space. So this is the object we wanted to study. And the Regi limit corresponds when I put all these points to null infinity. So that, you see, if take, for example, the operator J A1, I put it at minus infinity in the null direction. So y plus is equal to minus infinity. And then this will it will evolve, and it will be annihilated at y plus is equal to plus infinity. Yes?
What process is dominated by this change? Photon scattered from the photon.
What will be the exchange?
No. What measurement that we do would be dominated by this process?
If you do an electron, scatter electron off the photon.
You never scatter an off share of it.
No. That was in the first slide. The first coupling is you have an external electron who exchanges a photon. Mm-hmm. That coupling is just electromagnetic coupling. So that's just a number in the cross section. And then what you really need to compute, what is hard, is to compute the interaction of the photon with the proton. Okay? That photon is off-shell.
The intermediate one.
The one inside, yes. So then you just have to multiply by the electromagnetic coupling. That's the easy part. So it's this guy. See, there's a coupling, but this part is easy of diagram. What you focus is just on this in this three-point function, and then by the optical theorem, that's just the imaginary part of the four-point function. Okay. So the range limit corresponds usually to send S to infinity and all the other kinematic invariants fixed. We can see just by Fourier transform to what that corresponds in position space, and it corresponds basically to place the operators as you see here at null infinity. So, to understand the Regi limit now, since we are sending all the points to infinity, it's convenient to try to understand, to do some trick to have better hold of this limit. So, this corresponds to the following. I can do, you see, here I plotted. Our physical space, if you want. And we are taking our points to infinity. But if you remember, this guy can be mapped to ADS. It's like a covering that like a central patch, a Poincaré patch of ADS. And now I can use another patch of ADS, say, for example, 4.1, which was at infinity. I can use, instead of the blue patch, I can use this Poincaré patch. And the point now becomes in the center of that patch. So I will do that for each point. So that the point, it will be at the center of the corresponding Poincaré patch. And the way to do this, so this is if you want the ADS geometrical picture, but you can even forget about ADS just by conformal symmetry, is just to do a conformal symmetry at each point. So this is what I explained here. So I just do a conformal transformation that will bring each of these points to the central of some Poincaré patch. And then I will consider the corresponding correlator. So basically what happens here is I have to, the initial correlator will transform, and I call this now AMN is the transformed one. The corresponding operators transform under this conformal transformation. For example, for the current, it's written here, the expression, just standard. And now it's much nicer because the Regi limit will correspond to send all the coordinates to zero. So it's easier to study the limit. Very good. So this is the first step we do. And now what we want to do is to write the most general form of the amplitude, just restricted by conformal symmetry, and then take the limit, the Regel limit, and understand it. So the first thing to understand is that of the conformal group, translations in the patch 1 and 3 correspond to special conformal transformations in the patch 2 and 4, as you see here. And in particular, if I do it's just a small translation, so I keep myself in the Regel limit that I've just defined, the special conformal transformations will be just not to anything. Just keep the same point in the same place. Similarly, the translations in the patch 2 and 4 correspond to conformal transformations in the patch 1 and 3. So immediately, I can construct two quantities, which are basically are invariant under these transformations that are important to construct my cross ratios in the amplitude. So it's basically essentially the difference x1 minus x3 and x2 minus x4 will be invariant under these transformations. Then I still have Lorentz transformations and dilatations of the conformal group. So Lorentz transformations on this x will just act as Lorentz transformations on both x and x bar. And dilatations will basically rescale this, this x and x bar. So these two transformations are, if you want, the residual transformal conformal group. Just like in the usual standard process at high energies, you have the residual the transverse group is just rotations in the plane transverse to the scattering. Now, with conformal symmetry, you have a more symmetry, so you have a transverse conformal group, which is basically given by these relations. And the cross relations I have to construct with x and x bar quantities such that they are invariant under these transformations. And it's easy to see what you need to do. You basically take the product of the square of the vectors. This is obviously invariant under both. So this defines my sigma. And a quantity is basically constructed out of the scalar product with a zero weight on each of these variables. So sigma and rho will be my cross ratios. The amplitude will depend on functions of these quantities, and that's where the dynamic information will be stored. The Regel limit now is very simple. It simply sends sigma to zero, keeping rho fixed. So this is what now in this language and these variables is the right limits, and this is right way, the easiest way to look at the problem. Okay, so now what we have. We know that the just from conformal symmetry, the amplitude can be written as a function of x and x bar. Here I've defined the reduced amplitude. So what you see in the denominator is simply the disconnected one. It's just the one corresponding to free propagation. So we need to study this reduced amplitude, Amn. And now you can construct all the tensor structures that respect the conformal group. And basically there are four of them. I'm just telling you what is the result. So the general amplitude will be a sum of functions of the cross ratios that we don't know, times some tensor structures that are fixed by scale, by Lorentz invariants, conformal invariants. I give you here an example, which is the easiest one. The other ones are a bit larger, bigger, which is basically one of the structures, something like that. Etmn minus 2x mxn divided by x. It's one of the structures. They transform as tensors under the residual SO31 conformal transverse conformal. Just a minor technical detail. This I epsilons, one needs to be careful because, for example, this guy that corresponds to the free propagation between these points, operator, the current goes from 1 to 3, one has to be careful with this with I epsilons because notice that x is in the patch 1 and x3 is the coordinate in patch 3. So one has to be careful doing the Feynman diagrams when we are doing Feynman propagator from x1 to x3 and choose the correct I epsilon prescription, okay. And that's the result, for example, for the free propagation. I can explain that later, but I don't think we need to do that now. Okay, so this is it will be the general form of the amplitude, functions of the cross ratios times some tensor structure that we know. And now, let's go to the to see what happens in the Regel limit. So first, we believe that any amplitude can be written as a sum of conformal partial waves of definite spin and dimension. And one can construct this conformal partial waves and take the limit and look at the expression. So this is the result I'm telling you now here. So you see, I'm considering a diagram where there will be here in the middle some state with definite spin and definite dimension. I take in that conformal partial wave the Regi limit, and this is the result. So the result, the sigma, one of our cross ratios, x squared times x bar squared, the dependence is here in the front. So it goes as sigma to 1 minus j. J is the spin of the conformal partial wave that is exchanged. Then it has some functions of the other cross ratio rho, multiplying different tensor structures. I'm not saying here explicitly what that are the functions. They are known, but I'm not saying explicitly. And the different tensor structures, if you see, is what you can build with to have weight zero out of the x and x bars. So this is the result for a conformal partial wave. Now, generically, any amplitude will be a sum of all these conformal partial waves. So one will need to sum, in particular, and this is the in the context of string theory or weak coupling in QCD, this is what happens. One has to sum over all spins of the exchange particles and also over all dimensions. So the sum over all dimensions, one can simply do by, I can transfer, I trade it with an integral over some variable nu, dimensional variable nu, times some basis of functions of that variable. So this is basically integral of nu, you see, times omega is some function, is a basis of functions on of this cross ratio rule. Then I have to sum over an infinite number of spins. And this is the typical thing that happens in Regi theory. I can do a Waters and Sommerfeld transform, which basically amounts, I replace the sum by an integral, and then deform the counter and assume that there is a Regi pole there that will dominate the process. And that happens in this theory. So this is what you see here. Basically, this is the trick I have done. So now the reduced amplitude becomes here an, as a dependence on my cross ratio sigma with 1 minus j of nu. J of nu is that Regi pole. Finally, I wrote it, these four structures. I basically defined here some differential operator that acts on x, only on x. And with that differential operators, so there are four of them, they are listed here. I can construct basically a linear combination of these tensor structures that we saw before. So this is just a convenient way to repack the amplitude. And in particular, notice that these operators just depend on the x's. And this happens because the tensor structure M and N is given by the current operators. And in the Regi, when you have this Regi form of the amplitudes, you expect to have some factorization. There's a coupling of these operators to the region. There is the residue. And then there is the coupling to the other extent states. So you expect all the tensor structures to just have x dependence. And that's why you can write it as the differential operator, as you see here. This last part, no, you can just do it mathematically, but this is what makes sense. This part of writing this tensor structure this way. I could put all the x and x bars, but I think it makes more sense to do that. And it, later on, it becomes natural. The assumption here is that there is a Regi pole. That's the assumption. What? That there is a Regi pole? Well, yes, no, I mean, there can be more, but they will be subleading. So this is the Regi pole that in the complex plane is more to the right. Okay? We have experience from the string theory in flat space that things that exists. I mean, there's no reason, in principle, it should also exist in ADS. And that weak coupling, the computations I will show even in QCD, you also have this Regi pole. Yes? What D? It's subleading trajectories. So you have more states that you can exchange. And they will also contribute to the amplitude, but they are subleading. Because you have like all the tower of states. Okay, so let me make here some overviews of what we have done so far. We started with the hadronic tensor, if you want, so the physical amplitude computed in momentum space. We did a Fourier transform because we wanted to explore the conformal symmetry. So we went to position space, and then we need to understand what would be the Regi limit of that amplitude that corresponds to this picture. We found it convenient to do a conformal transformation to bring these points to the center of different patches. And then we have this amplitude AMN, X and X bar. This is, corresponds to this picture that now starts to make sense in ADS because this is basically the boundary of ADS. And now you may ask, what is ADS? And to understand that better, what I will do now, it will be I will do another Fourier transform, if you want, just because I feel like doing it, and then we see that it makes sense, from these variables, X and X bar, to some dual variables, P and P bar. Okay? And once we get this guy and learn how to relate it to the initial amplitude, we'll see that naturally ADS appears there. Okay, so first thing just to do a Fourier transform from the A to this B of PP, A of XX bar to the B of PP bar is just a definition. So I wrote there what I want to be the Fourier transform and also defined the reduced amplitude. So with these factors are. And from the Iepson's prescription, one can see that this amplitude only has support in the future light cone. Okay? In the future middle wedge, I'm sorry. So it will, this guy will be non-zero only when P and P bar are future directed vectors. Therefore vectors. And then another thing is that we know that there is current conservation. So from current conservation, that actually is just the standard result. P scalar with this momentum space amplitude is equal to zero. So this invites us to change, instead of parameterizing these vectors with their size in this Milne wedge, and their position in this hyperbolic three-dimensional space, H3. Okay, so if I do that, so I can basically change coordinates for these vectors for those coordinates. This constraint basically means that this amplitude, it will be a matrix in this hyperbolic, the index will be in this hyperbolic H3 space. Okay, this is actually the polarization, and we'll see that later on that H3 is the impact parameter for the ADS process. So one can then just do the computation and write the Regi representation for the amplitude doing the Fourier transform. So we add the Regi representation of this guy. This basically will give us a Regi representation for the other amplitude. And this is the result. So things are starting to make more sense and similar to the usual Regi theory. So you see, this guy has only polarizations with indices on H3. It goes with some variable S as the spin minus one. This is the usual result in flat space, S to J minus one. This S is related to the size of these vectors. It's defined there. And then depends on some function of the distance between the two points here on the hyperbolic three-dimensional space. So it only depends on this L, this space as precisely the invariance of the residual conformal symmetry, which is S031 is the S031 is the symmetry of the hyperbolic three-dimensional space. And this S L is just geodesic distance between these two points. And here I already just wrote two tensor structures. So you see there's only two residues, beta 1 and beta 4, because when you take a conserved current from the four tensor structures, it will collapse to two, as is usually the case. So this is the form, if you want. This is called also the ADS phase shift, is the amplitude when we compute this in doing the Fourier transform. So let's try to understand this better. And to do that, we can now relate, so since we have now the Regi representation of this guy, we can relate it to this amplitude and say this, write it in terms of that. And this is what I've done here. So the physical amplitude in momentum space is equal, this is the standard result, 2 times the S is the Mendelssohn variable, an integral over the transverse space, physical space, so this is R2, okay? L is the impact parameter in the physical space, times some function, so this is the piece that we don't understand so far very well, I will explain, and times that guy that I just showed before, that was the Fourier transform of the amplitude. Okay, so let's try to understand this in ADS. What this corresponds, I could do this computation without having done everything I've done so far, using the ADS FT duality. So thinking of the process that's strong coupling, but now, so far, I've never seen that. Basically, I can think that I am scattering in ADS. I put outside in the boundary here the operator for the current at point x1. Here for the scalar operator, and they will create some state for the dual field inside ADS, and I will consider the dual field scattering at very high energy. So this corresponds, they will follow along the geodesics inside ADS. So these geodesics will go along this null surface in ADS, and this null surface will intersect on a three-dimensional hyperbolic space, H3. So this gives us the geometrical understanding of what this H3 was. And in particular, the distance between the two geodesics is the impact parameter. So that is the impact parameter space. So this is the picture you see here. These two points correspond in H3 to these two points. They project to the boundary, to the impact parameter in the physical space. But they are inside ADS at some distance, coordinate distance R and R bar. Then we can have a physical interpretation for what this S is in ADS. It's basically the ADS energy of these geodesics that are intersecting in the center of mass frame. So we choose global time such that each geodesic has the same energy. And L, as I just told, is the impact parameter. What are these functions? These functions are basically the wave function for the ADS dual field of the operator. So in this case, it will be the gauge field that is dual to the current operator. This is this function F. And this other function is the same thing, but just for the scalar operator. So it will be some scalar field inside ADS with some mass. So what we have here is, if you want, all this expression is a representation that only relies on conformal symmetry so far, but we can understand geometrically in ADS, a representation of the phase shift for the physical phase shift for the physical process. Okay? So this is, and we now can understand why we went through all this work. In fact, we got this and then we went backwards. But the goal now is that everything I wrote was just dependent on conformal symmetry. So this is the resume so far. So our results so far are valid for any value of the tooth coupling. This is the basic contribution to the reduced amplitude in terms of depending on X and X bar, the contribution from a Reggie pole, the general form. We understood that this impact parameter representation in the CFT corresponds in the ADS to the ADS phase shift. I didn't go through that details, those details, but you can also have the Reggie representation for the structure functions. Once you know the Dronic tensor, you can also do that, but I don't think it's necessary to do that now. Okay, so now let me just mention some dynamics, because we have so far been mostly just symmetry and assuming that there is a Reggie pole. Let me just tell you a few results. And this is basically due to these people. So in general, we expect that the trajectory depends also on the tooth coupling. So the spin and the residues will vary with the coupling. I call tooth coupling alpha bar strong. So in particular, at strong coupling, one can do the computation, and we can do the computation in ADS. And here, of course, I'm thinking in terms of n equal to 4 supernumeraries, not NPCD. And what happens is that the spin is 2, is the spin of the graviton minus some string corrections. And it corresponds to this diagram in ADS. I'm looking at, I'm cutting ADS, which is basically a Witten diagram. And this alpha, the residues are all real. This corresponds in this limit to the amplitude is elastic. Okay, there's no absorption. Corresponds to this picture that the particles inside EDS just follow a geodesic, and the amplitude corresponds to the phase shift. Then we can look at this amplitude also at weak coupling. And this works both in n equal to 4 and in QCD. And in this limit, the amplitude is dominated by the exchange of a pair of regularized gluons with a lot of diagram, cross ladder diagrams with gluon exchanges as well. This is basically the work of Lipatov and the collaborators. So in this case, the spin is 1 plus corrections. And the residues are purely imaginary. So this corresponds to an absorptive amplitude, which in the beginning you saw the photon will hit the proton and will produce a lot of atoms. So we take the imaginary part and get the cross section for that. And this is basically why this alpha is imaginary. So there's absorption. Yes? The spin is 1 is, we'll do it. It's just the spin 1 corresponds just to have two gluons being exchanged. And then you compute the amplitude, and it will not depend on the variable sigma or s, because it's 1 minus j, so it will not depend. So once then you start, that corresponds just to two gluon exchange, is what I will be considering. Then if you start doing other diagrams and resum of the diagrams, you will start getting all these steps. But I'm not an expert on that, but I think what they do is they resum all the log of s contributions. Alpha strong times log of s, they resum all of them, and then you get this more corrections. Okay, so now let's, from now on, I will focus only at weak coupling. So from now on, the rest of the talk, I will not be talking about strong coupling. And in particular, this state that is being exchanged here is called the Pomeron. It is a state which has the quantum numbers has no color. It's colorless state of the vacuum. And it has been explored in the literature, the fact that it is the propagator for that state is can be constructed in a conformal explored the conformal, the transverse conformal group. So the transverse space is R2, and the ADS transverse space was the hyperbolic three-dimensional space. Its isometries are SO31, corresponds to the conformal group of the transverse space R2. And this guy is just, this propagator is just a four-point function of scalar primaries with zero weight. And that fact has been explored by Lipatov. So what I now write here is the following. I have my amplitude. Remember, the insertions are at x1 and x3. The amplitude will depend on the difference. This will correspond to electromagnetic current. There will be a coupling to the region, and the same thing in the other side. And this coupling now will be, there will be here 2 points. It will depend only on the transverse space that I'm calling here z1 and z3 in the formulas. And the same thing in the other side. So the amplitude can be written in the following form. It's an integral over these intermediate points that do the coupling to the Pomeron of some function f of z1, z3, z2, z4. This is the propagator for the Pomeron, and this is a four-point function for scalar operators with zero weight. And then one expects that these impact factors can also be written, will depend on z1 and z3, the coupling to the Pomeron, and x, which is the external point. So what you see here, this is the way to write this. This part of the way of writing the amplitude is known. This part with impact factors is what we did to be able to express this reduced amplitude after doing those conformal transformations. And now we need to construct these impact factors as conformal objects because we know that this thing will have this residual conformal symmetry. And here also, remember that this amplitude depends on this invariant sigma and rho. I will be considering the weak coupling limit where you just exchange two gluons, and that corresponds to j equal to 1. And in that limit, it will not depend on sigma. So it will only depend through this combination. If there was that such a term, it will come here in this function f. So in order to realize the transverse conformal symmetry in a manifest way, I will do the usual trick of going to some embedding space. So the way to do that is that, you see, I have here my hyperbolic three-dimensional space. The boundary of this space, you can think of to being the physical transverse space R2. And the boundary can be identified with a light ray, okay, in some four-dimensional embedding space. So the boundary is R2, and it can be identified with a light ray in the four-dimensional Minkowski space. So the light ray corresponds to what? Points that obey z squared equal to 0 and are identified up to rescaling. So if I do a Lorentz transformation, the light ray is mapped to itself, and that corresponds to conformal transformations in the boundary. So generically, a point, I will use this coordinate, z plus, z minus, z perpendicular. And if you do this particular choice, it's called it's the Poincaré choice, then the boundary corresponds precisely to R2. So if you take this particular section of the light curve. And it's very nice because, for example, scalar products now in this of this embedding vector corresponds simply to the distance, the Euclidean distance in the R2. So I will use this language in order to write expressions for my impact factors and for the propagator of the product. So as I told you before, f can just be written as a four-point function of scalar primers of zero dimension. And this is the expression. Each term corresponds to the propagator of a single gluon from one side to the other side of the diagram. This is basically the work of Lipatov. What he did was that one can then take these two gluon propagators and decompose them in transverse conformal partial waves of some definite spin and dimension. So this can generically be done. And he found the exact decomposition for that in that case. So what you see here is basically you have to sum over the spin of the intermediate space, spin of the transverse spin, I'm calling it n, and do an integral over dimensions, and the dimension of the partial waves will be correspond to the poles in this expression. And the basis for these conformal blocks can be constructed simply by doing a product of three-point functions, where take this three-point function. Points z1 and z3 correspond to scalars of zero dimension. And the intermediate state has some definite spin n and some dimension that depends on u. We do the product, integrate on z7. This gives you the conformal blocks. And this corresponds to the corresponding decomposition for that expression. So now let's try to do something similar to define a basis for our impact factors. So first, by conformal symmetry, they will have to be homogeneous functions of weight zero. Remember that this, in the embedding space, when I say homogeneous of weight zero, is using Z in the embedding space. Because that's where Z is identified with lambda times Z, is the light ray. So out of these three quantities, you can only do a single cross ratio. And this is written here. Recall that you cannot use this z1 or z3 squared because they are zero, they are null. So this is the single cross ratio which has weight zero. So the impact factor has to be a function of this guy times tensor structures of weight zero as well. So if you just go and look, there are five possible tensor structures. I wrote them here just as a reference to the five possibilities. So the general form of the impact factor will be a sum of functions of the cross ratios times the corresponding tensor structure. Now, what one would like to understand is to write this, to decompose these impact factors in their transverse spin, to find a basis where they have some definite transverse spin. So this is what I've written here. And maybe it's better if I show you first the picture. So what I'm saying is that now you can do some sort of Fourier transform. So here, this mu is some dimension. And I define a basis of impact factors in a very simple way. So remember, x was a point in H3. in hyperbolic three-dimensional space. So I construct it as first take a bulk to boundary propagator of take first the scalar part. So this will be scalar point and another scalar. So this will be the scalar propagator. So n here will be 0. And this will have some dimension that I'm integrating over, times the three-point coupling between this z5, a point with some spin and dimension, and the two external points z1 and z3. So this defines for me this function for n equal to 0 that I call chi of mu. So integrating over mu, I can write any function of the cross ratio u, and in particular, if I differentiate this guy with respect to using this differential operator, I can find the four possible impact factors that are associated with the scalar transverse spin equal to 0. Then I can write also a basis for the spin two component of the impact factor. And that is basically the same picture, but I do here a propagator, bulk to boundary propagator with spin two, transverse and traceless. Okay, so I know that the explicit form of that propagator. I write here the three-point coupling, and I have my basis function, integrate with the corresponding coefficient, and that's my general spin two impact factor. So this allows us to decompose the impact factors in the spin zero and spin two components. And now it's very, very simple to go back to the Reggie theory. With this representation, now, generically speaking, you see an impact factor corresponds to some to this part times some function of mu of the diagram. This three-point function times this three-point function is the FKL propagator. And this guy with this propagator to the bulk is the other impact factor. Since in the other side we're taking scalar operators, it only has a scalar component, so this n prime there has to be 0. And because these three-point couplings satisfy some orthogonality relation, the spin two part in this side of the diagram doesn't contribute. And we get back our result for the Reggie theory. So you see, I was able now to reconstruct the Reggie form of the amplitude from using this BFKL formalism. So we have only four tensor structures that are all correspond only to the spin zero component of the impact. It's the spin two part. This it will be useful to do gamma star scattering, two off shell photons. And this is people also use this process. And so this will be convenient. And in that case, the n equal to part of the impact factor will contribute. Finally, let me just mention that, for example, you can see here that the residue factorizes. This is the transform of one impact factor. This is the transform in the Lipatov decomposition of the Pomeran propagator, and this is the transform of the other guy, so the transforms of our impact factors in the basis that I've just constructed. So now we may wish to do some explicit computation instead of just constructing generic of these objects. And for example, I can show you the result for a massless quark. So in QCD, but since I'm using conformal QCD, I just take a massless quark and try to compute the impact factor. So this is the current operator. The impact factor corresponds basically to this piece of the diagram that I just showed you, where you have the current at x1 and the other current at x3. And it exchanges at points W to gluons. Now we need to be careful when one does these diagrams, because we are computing these propagators, but the points x1 and x3 are at different patches, different propagator patches. So one needs to be careful with IEPS and prescriptions. But doing that, it's fine. So one can compute this Feynman diagram. To make contact with the results, as I just told you, the intermediate points have to be parameterized in some appropriate way. I can choose any parameterization I wish, so this is the correct one, when one has to do the integrals over these points. And this is the result. Let me just tell you what the result is. So this is some definite computation. The impact factor becomes extremely simple. If you look at the books in QCD, usually it's in momentum space, and it's like half a page. Here's much simpler. You simply have the impact factor. The here is the single function that it can depend on, because it's the only cross ratio. It's a u to the q. And in this case, has just two tensor structures, the metric and this tensor structure. So this is the impact factor for a massless quark in QC. You can play the same game now in n equal to 4 supernumeraries. So in particular, generically, an impact factor will be proportional to some decomposition. Remember of our bases of spin 2 and scalar bases and the spin 0. And these are the results. So just, this is, again, a similar computation. I'm just telling you what are the results. For a Weyl fermion, this, is this gives the composition in the bases I just constructed for a Weyl fermion. S1, S2, S3, S4 correspond to the scalar components, T to the spin 2 components. And for a complex scalar, these are the results. So there's a lot of computations to arrive here, but I'm just telling you the results. And now with these two information, these two pieces of information, I can compute the impact factor for the R current spin 2, for the R current of n equal to 4 supernumeraries. And what finds out is that the spin 2 component vanishes. You see this guy and this guy cancel. There's a minus sign. So the R current in n equal to 4 supernumeraries, the spin 2 component of its impact factor vanishes. So this led us to conjecture the fact that the impact factors of all n equal to 4 chiral primaries will only have transverse spin 0. Because it cannot be a coincidence spin. And that is, at strong coupling, it's reasonable. Because at strong coupling, we only have the supergravity multiplet, which is dual to chiral primaries. And if I take those operators, they will couple in ADS only to the graviton, because the graviton is what will dominate. Okay? So one expects, since the graviton is dual to the spin zero component of the Pomeran, it's not to the whole Pomeran, it's to the spin zero, transverse spin zero component, one expects that will happen with all the other chiral primaries. But this is just a strong coupling result. So now I still have 10, 15 minutes, I guess. So let me tell you, describe a few now a phenomenological application of these results. I will be a bit more less precise, and I will now from now on forget about the indices, and I will just consider scattering of scalar state. So imagine I'm just considering the longitudinal polarization of the fault. Okay. With the results I've just presented, we haven't done this yet. We are in the process of doing it now. With the results I've just showed you, we can be much more precise in doing what I'm showing, and that's still an open problem. So generally, the cross-section can be written in the impact parameter representation in the physical space as an integral over transverse space of the real part of this guy, where this delta is the phase shift. So you see, in the linear approximation, this becomes basically twice the imaginary part of the phase shift. And since I'm computing, the cross section is computed at zero momentum transfer. Here, I don't have the exponential of iq perpendicular dot l perpendicular. That's because it's at zero momentum transfer. So what we showed, and now I'm just writing things without polarizations, is that this phase shift can be written as an integral of ADS wave functions times an ADS phase shift. And conformal symmetry means that or forces the phase shift just to depend on this S and L through these combinations that you see here. So this is basically, if you want, the holography in the transverse space. This is what I showed you. Now, if these wave functions are basically picked inside ADS at some 1 over Q, at some scale 1 over Q, 1 over Q bar. So remember, Q was the off-shellness of the photon. That makes sense. 1 over Q bar is the way we used to mimic confinement. That will be like very inside ADS, where is our proton, somewhere there. So I can basically, these integrals basically will be picked around these points. And S, which was R bar times the physical Mendelstam S, basically becomes Q over X. Okay? So Knowing this fact, I can basically, in this expression, replace the phase shift over there and there, and I can trade the integral over the physical impact parameter to the ADS impact parameter, doing the R integrals in this way, and I get this result. So the cross section becomes an integral from L goes to infinity, very large impact factor, just like there, until some finite value. The finite value corresponds when this L is zero, but you see when this L is zero, they can be still separate inside ADS. And is given by the log of Q over Q bar. See, this lower bound in this integral depends, Q bar is fixed, is the QCD scale. The Q is something that you observe in the experiment. Okay, so different values of Q will correspond to different bounds here in this integral. And we are left with this integral over the ADS impact parameter. Okay, so here this sash of L is kinematics, is conformal symmetry. The fact that the phase just depends on S and L as well, but its specific expression will depend on the dynamical information. So now what happens, this is now input from experiment, the cross-section grows as we decrease X. And what is believed is that this corresponds to gluon saturation. So the cross-section will increase because there will start to be a lot of gluons for small x inside the proton, and they will fill up the basic low size of the proton. So this is basically, this will be the gluon structure function. So they will dominate the process. In particular, there is some Q, some value of the, as you do measure the for different values of Q, is called Q saturation when basically the amplitude starts to grow as a power of 1 over x, and or if you want as a power of s, a physical s is 1 over x, and that breaks unitarity. It grows too fast. So this is known from the experiment. So how does one define how saturation starts? Saturation starts basically when the imaginary part of the ADS phase shift or of the phase shift is of the order 1. When that happens is when it starts basically grow. And this is easy to understand if you just take the representation in terms of the region of the Pomeron for this ADS phase shift, equate it to 1, make some saddle point approximation, you basically get this relation that the impact parameter where the phase imaginary part becomes of order 1 happens for some number omega times log of S. So this is what it is in, it's in this picture. This is L. There is some line here where the amplitude starts growing dangerous, if you want. And there is some way of fixing this guy from geometric scaling experiment, this number, but. So this is what is saturation. Now, deep saturation, and this is what where I think this is very useful, is if you still consider smaller impact parameter in ADS, then the imaginary part will be very large. That will correspond to a black disk in the geometrical picture in ADS, or if you want in conformal QCD. So this is what I mean here. You see now, the cross-section, this is just the expression I wrote in the previous slide. But since the imaginary part of the phase shift is very large, all the dynamical information is washed out. This, you just get a 1 here because of the black disk. And when we integrate over ADS impact parameter, the part that dominates the integral is basically the part I wrote there in red, from the saturation line until the point where you are corresponds to your measurement, your value of Q. So if you are with Q, looking at the kinematics for the experimental points where Q is inside saturation, this line in red will dominate this integral. And all the dynamical information is only contained where you started saturation, because inside the amplitude is just corresponds to a black disk in ADS. So you don't need to compute anything, basically, for the amplitude. So this, in this case, this is what we have done over a year ago. Here, what I basically from this expression, you can have an expression for the cross section and then relate this to the experimental data, looking at the region where there is saturation. So here, basically, it's plotted all the experimental points in terms of Q over X and Q for deep inelastic scattering from ERA, there's a compilation. And this is the region where it's believed to be saturated. So there is saturation. And the boundary is somewhere here. So these experimental points, I'm plotting here the cross sections, these experimental points correspond to the corresponding arrows are these dots somewhere there. Now, from the previous expression, one can obtain our prediction for what would be the cross section. And what I wrote in each box is for values of Q over X that are in a given range, in an interval. For example, this first guy corresponds to this gap, to this band here. So there are only points in this corner which correspond to this point. And for example, if you look in the middle for some graph here, the qualitative, I mean, it works well. The lines go, I mean, for in particular, this concave form corresponds to what is. So we are trying to work on this now because now we have handling of the polarizations. And since people measure F2 and F1 for the structure constants, we expect to be able to make some better statements. So let me just make some final comments. So the question, I think, still remains, but it's very nice. If is the deeply saturated deep inelastic scattering is showing as a black disk in EDS just because of the conformal symmetry? And it, of course, that could be other extensions of this work, for example, in particular to try to break conformal invariance. It's important to understand what is ADS miniaturization. I at some point, I just assumed that that phase shift grows and the imaginary part becomes very large. But it would be nice to have some understanding from miniaturization as one has in flat space. Usually, the standard phase shift has a positive imaginary part that comes just from S matrix in entirety. It would be nice to try to understand that in EDS. We don't know the answer. And the fact that I obtained the impact, we obtained these impact factors, such as clean formulas. And the Balitsky is now already using these formulas, and he already computed the first order correction to the impact factors. It would be quite nice to try to understand, for example, at strong coupling, what is the correct way of computing them. And if there are some integrability structure underneath, because for the Pomeran, there is some integrability structure. So it will be very nice to pack everything together. But okay. Thank you very much.
So the black disk is, it's not really something of a black hole, right? So it's just,
it's not a black hole. It's just like a black disk. If you scatter and what goes through there.
It's a region.
Yes. Just. I mean, this approximation is if you start with increasing the impact factor, at some point you may expect that you create a black hole. Right? Just like in EDS, if you scatter at high energy, at some point you expect a phase of black hole. At weak coupling, you can analyze these conditions, and you don't expect that to happen. So I can show you.
Do you want to comment on how much of this carries over, or how much hard work do you have to do all over again when you go to the non-conformal?
We haven't been able to do. I mean, we thought that would be very nice, for example, to understand the running of the coupling, because we are assuming that the coupling will run with Q, with the Q, right? We don't know how to do some, there should be a way of perturbatively using our language and then be able to introduce some deformation, some operators that will deform breaking conformal invariance, but we don't, we haven't been able to do it. I mean, that's the long-term goal, to use all this technology to be able to start understanding how things run in the code.
Can you use it for multi-latching?
Pardon?
Can you use it for multi-region kinematics more than 4.5.
I was thinking about that the other day. The first question would be to understand the Regi limit in position space when you have like 6 amplitudes. Yes, I think that's a good question.
Can you comment about different Regi limit in position space? By banks and companies?
I didn't understand that. I cannot comment. Because, I mean, they claim that the limit is more general. So our limit is a special case of the limit concern. Okay. But on the other hand, we are able to reproduce at strong coupling and weak coupling of the Regi limit that we one knows how to compute from QCD and from strong. So I cannot see, I really didn't understand. I mean, they have to show first that they can have the graviton and the Pommer. And we tried to understand it. I talked a lot with Juwono, but we were not able to understand that. I know he was discussing with them.
I guess Miguel's around for
this week.
More time for more questions later. But for now, let's thank him again. Very nice.
Thank you.